Hey, amazing kings, listening in from around the planet. In today's episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast, we welcome in Jeremy Klein. Jeremy is a coach and the host of the Change Work Life podcast. He's a property investor and a lawyer who helps some of the wealthiest families on the planet. He has been playing the flute for over 30 years and wonders if he should be a better player by now. Deep soul searching, witnessing how his long daily commute was eating up family time and his weekends being booked up doing the admin, he started asking, was this enough for him as a man, as a husband, and as a father? The Change Work Life podcast became his quest to find the answers to his own work-life dilemma and share the wisdom with many others with the same problem. Jeremy lives in Hertfordshire with his beautiful wife and daughter. Jeremy, it's an absolute honor and a privilege to have you on the show, man. You're very welcome.
It's fantastic to be here. Thanks so much for inviting me on.
Jeremy, as I mentioned to you just off screen, off recording, I'm so pumped and excited here because there's so much relevance for myself in this. You know, having went through the tough, hard journey of what it was, you know, my original profession was as a physiotherapist. And then making the transition from that into coaching, it's been a long, bumpy road. And I am one of those guys that at the beginning of my journey, I didn't have enough humility to actually reach out and get proper support. So there's a part of me going, oh man, I wish I met Jeremy Klein like 5 or 6 years ago. That road didn't need to be as bumpy. So I'm really, from a personal perspective, really excited to get to know, you know, what you've learned along the way, doing it sort of the right way, or, you know, what your bumps in road were as well. You know, within the context, be the husband she brags about, you know, marriage, so-called marriage issues, very often, not exclusively, but a lot of times it's not to do with the marriage and work and where a man earns his money so often plays a major part in that. You know, when you first started noticing in your own life, shit, all is not well, you know, your relationship with your work and your life. And, you know, was there one moment or was it a slow bubbling away in the background, growing awareness that it wasn't right? How did that play out for you?
Well, first of all, I absolutely recognize in you your statement about, I wish I'd met me like as I am now 5 or 6 years ago as well, because I'm sure I would have transitioned a heck of a lot quicker than I am currently doing. I would say that it's been a slow bubbling punctuated by moments that have kind of kicked me on a little bit further down the path or hardened my resolve. And I suppose for the longest time, I've done what I felt I should do rather than what I necessarily enjoy or have felt that I could do in terms of my profession. So I was always brought up that you work hard, you do well at school, go to university, get a degree, enter a profession, do a good job. And law is such a profession. I mean, you can do very well as a lawyer. It's a respected profession, despite all the corny lawyer jokes. It's it's a good thing to do. And I don't know whether I ever really thought that a job was something which you really could enjoy, genuinely enjoy. I thought it was, you know, it was something that you did with your day. Hopefully you were good at it. And it was then, you did it and you saved up your retirement. And then that was when things changed, when you hit retirement. And I suppose the first indicator that I might not be approaching things the right way, and, you know, this is a pretty big indicator, but it was when my mum died. My mum died when she was only aged 57. And I vividly remember her not really liking work for a heck of a long time. And she got to a a stage in life where she was basically calling it in. It was, okay, well, it's not going to be for that much longer. It'll be a few years retirement and then enjoy retirement, do what I want. And she never got there. And that was probably the first wake-up call for me. It wasn't really until a good 5 or 6 years later, though, that I really started to realize that there were alternatives. And it's definitely been a gradual by gradual approach. Through my work, I got exposed to the realm of property investment. It was something I act for some very, very high net worth individuals and families, as you mentioned. And one thing that they do a lot of is invest in property. And so I was looking around at this and thinking, I wonder if there's something in this. And so I started getting interested in that sort of thing, listening to podcasts, and found a podcast which spoke to that side of things and also business generally, mindset generally, all that kind of stuff. And it was through that I discovered this world of business and entrepreneurship. And it was following a book recommendation from the property related podcast, where it was talking about, it was like a blueprint to start your own business. It started with a massive sort of ranty section about why being employed just isn't a good way of doing things and how you can achieve much more in terms of financial freedom and time freedom if you start your own business. And it was that book which really got me thinking, okay, there's an alternative here. I don't have to be a lawyer and work until I retire. I could do something else. And so, it was probably that moment actually reading that book, which first got me really into the mindset of, you know what, it's time to start thinking seriously about making a change here.
I'm curious, Jeremy, was there any story in that book, any reflection that just jumps out at you as, you know, that was the one?
The book, it was called Unscripted. It's by a chap called MJ DeMarco. He wrote another book called Millionaire Fastlane, which is quite well known. I think what leapt out was, it's probably the relationship between time and money, because as a lawyer, you charge by the hour, you get paid as an employee, you're trading time for money. And it was reading the book when he was describing the certain characteristics of starting a business. It was the possibility of how you can really break that link, how you can do something where, in essence, you can be making money whilst you sleep. You can set things up that there's passive recurring income coming in. And if you choose to stop working for a couple of weeks, that doesn't then cause your income to stop for that time. So that was probably the biggest takeaway, that this kind of business model existed.
Yeah, I'm aware of that author. I have his book. It's in Italian, and the Fastlane one, and it definitely was an inspiration of mine a good few years ago. I think I read it before. It was probably Planting Seeds. It's an amazing approach to it, and definitely opening the eyes. I didn't actually want to bypass a. Thank you for sharing so vulnerably and honestly about your mom passing. First of all, I just want to say, like, sorry to hear that. And just to follow up, is like, I can definitely relate. My own mother passed with cancer at the age of 64 last Christmas 12 months ago. And yeah, it's such an incredible life lesson. I know myself looking on, that was probably single-handedly like the biggest turning point in my adult life of getting real. In fact, I've achieved more in my career and financially in the last 14 months since she passed as a result of that. What was the biggest lesson for you? Like, if you could encapsulate it in like one line that you took from your mother's early passing, or what one shift did that bring about in your belief and approach with how you were viewing your career?
It's a bit of a cliche to say it, but life is not a rehearsal. You only get one shot at this. That it doesn't make sense to hang on until this, this time, things will get better when ... statistically speaking, we probably both will live until we're into our, 70s, 80s, 90s, but that doesn't mean that we should take that for granted. And it doesn't mean that we should put things on hold until that point. We can start now reflecting on, well, what do we actually really want to do that will fill us up and fulfill us now, rather than just, droning on until this time in the future when we can kick back and suddenly everything is going to be okay. I'm conscious that was a bit longer than one line, but life is not a rehearsal.
It was an unfair, loaded question to put it in one line, because there's so much we can speak, just that, as I say, with my own mother, it taught me so much. And definitely there was a sense of urgency that I'd never experienced in my life before, to really just go, okay, well, what the hell, what do I really need? What's absolutely necessary? And you were talking about there, like, to fill me up and fulfill me now. That was really it. It was like, what do I need to do, money wise and career wise? And the podcast was definitely birthed out of that. And within the relevance of obviously the audience here is like husbands listening in. I can't underline as much for myself personally. Actually, working as a physiotherapist, I had, a little bit of a backstory for you, Jeremy. I've mentioned in some episodes, some of the guys listening in long term will know this story. But I was working as a physiotherapist and I'd started my own private practice, and it was 3.5 years in and it was going really well. It was actually at the end of the best financial week in 3.5 years of business, word had got out there, word of mouth, definitely in a local healing practice, that's the key success factor in many ways. It was going really good, but I decided to get out. Because ultimately what was happening was it was eroding my marriage. It was eroding the confidence that myself and my beautiful queen had together. We had a vision of life and how it could have been, should have been, free living, like being able to travel, freedom to sort of choose our own schedule around the week and not have ultimately in physio, the clients were deciding the schedule. You had to work evenings and you had to work Saturday mornings. So you needed to get the sports in. And there were so many dictates outside of what myself and my beautiful woman wanted and what served our marriage. And I think that's such a crucial context that I just want to bake in for guys listening in is, you can put it on, you can mentally put it to the future, like, oh, well, I've just got 10 years or, heaven forbid if you're thinking of like 20 and 30 years ahead, but it's like your marriage is here now, your wife is here now. And like, what you're saying, Jeremy, like what, not answering that question, what fills me up and what fulfills me now? I've just seen it time and time again, with myself, but with guys I'm coaching, so often, more than 50% of the time, it's a lack of fulfillment in their career that is weighing them down. And without that in alignment, they're home late, but they're not inspired. They're feeling shit. They're not feeling motivated. And yeah, it's just that becomes a real dead weight in the marriage. I'm curious, Jeremy, in your own process of, slowly but surely realizing your career, the preordained sort of set path in the legal route. In realizing that wasn't the ultimate destination for you, what was showing up in your life as a husband, in you know, in your married life and in your family life? What were the signs for you that it was like, okay, this isn't what I wanted to be as a family man?
That's a really interesting question. And so I guess a few things happened at once. It's interesting what you were saying about, you know, having had your best financial week and then deciding after that that you wanted to quit. It was not really long after I got promoted that I was starting to think very, very seriously in terms of a shifting career. So when I was, if you like, serious about wanting to make a change, my daughter was probably no more than about a year old. In fact, she may even have been a little bit less than a year at that point. And I was able to spend a bit of time with her, but what I realized was that working full-time doing the job I was doing meant that I wasn't able to spend all that much time with her. And the real strain I felt was at weekends, because quite rightly, my wife, who'd been doing most of the childcare during the week, expected me to pick up the slack, which was, as it should be, except that I realized that it wasn't creating any time or space for me for other things. So be it personal admin or just things like hobbies or whatever, or just having that bit of headspace. And so I guess I found that difficult. I found the kind of working, commuting into London from where I live, leaving the house at 7 in the morning, not getting home till earliest 7:30 in the evening, have dinner, go to bed kind of thing. And then being on duty at the weekends, that was, you know, that was hard. And probably, and at least I don't think I felt resentful to my family, but I just felt a little bit resentful that I felt like I wasn't getting any time for myself. And so it was this appreciation of time, which was the first big hurdle for me. I realized that if I was going to make some kind of transition to something which did afford me more time, then I was going to need more time to make that transition. And so one of the things I did was get some coaching around that and dropped my hours. So I was no longer working full-time. I was working part-time. And that just freed up. I mean, it meant that I had more time at weekends to, you know, be the husband, be the father, take the pressure of my wife, take my daughter out to the park and push her on the swings for the millionth time. And then it freed up some extra time for me to pursue my own avenues.
My curiosity, and you know, it's always coming back to the relationship. How did that look like, you know, that initial idea? How did that look like in communicating that with your wife? Was there like an immediate support? Was she relieved? Was she like, oh, thank God, you know, like Jeremy has finally arrived to this conclusion? Or, you know, was there kickback that you had to get through? You know, like how easy or not so easy did that process look like for you as a couple to just navigate from this initial inspiration from you as a husband, as a father, as a family man, to actually going part-time?
Yeah, I mean, it was door number two. It was not easy. It was not, thank goodness. It was hard. And a very big reason why it was so hard was the way I approached it. And it's very much, if I'd known then what I know now, I would have approached it in a different way.
And, so... I love your honesty there. And I love you. You know, we've a friend in common, Carlos, who works in the same legal field as Jeremy. But I always admire Carlos's way. I don't know, it's the legal way of just finding such eloquent ways of describing parts that can be emotionally quite dramatic. If you knew then what you know now, how would you have done it differently? And I'm just baking in this context because this is the real part, you know, and I think this is I want to speak to this, you know, with you, Jeremy, just the context, but it's all context. I remember as a man, like listening to these super motivational guys, and it's like Tony Robbins, you know, oh, just take massive action, blah, you know, like just fucking go for it, just burn the ships. But it's not that easy. Because if you've no kids, you're not in a marriage, yeah, burn the fucking chips, you know, like sleep in a hostel for 6 months or a year if you want, whatever, sleep under a bridge if you want. It's an entirely different context when you have, you know, the ecosystem of a family life, of a marriage, of parenting, of bills, of, you know, you have your established whole life. That's a different thing for a husband to come in and have a radical new shift, a new idea, a new direction in life. So this is so invaluable. Your experience of, you know, looking back and seeing like what way you would go at it now, it's invaluable, I believe, for so many guys listening in.
Yeah. Let me start with how I did it, and then we can talk a bit about what I might have done differently. So I think my daughter was maybe about 6 months old at the time, at a guess. And it was, you know, full on like it is with any child. But we had the benefit of relatively regular nap times. So my daughter could usually be relied on in the afternoon to go down for a good hour, hour and a half, maybe even sometimes 2 hours. And that was break time. And my wife and I, during that time, we would usually do our own things. So I, at that time, was still, well, I was at the beginning of thinking about the business side of things and, you know, what that might look like. I didn't really know at the time. And my wife just did something to chill out. So quite often it would be reading a book, watching telly or whatever. And, you know, that was what we did. We'd kind of do our separate things. But it was also those couple of hours, really the only opportunity, or that's certainly what I felt, that we could speak to each other uninterrupted by the demands of a six-month-old child. And so without warning, without any kind of preface, I marched into the living room where my wife was trying to, you know, just chill out for a bit, and said to her, you know, I want to talk about something. The warning signs should have gone off when she said, oh, do we have to do this now? I could have then realized that, yeah, this maybe could have waited until she was a bit more receptive, but I had the bit between my teeth. And so I said, no, this can't wait. And then I boldly announced that I wanted to quit my job and start a new business. I didn't know what that business was going to be. I'd had a few ideas, which I mentioned, but the message was, I want to quit my job and start a business. The reaction was not, oh, brilliant, that sounds amazing. The reaction was more jaw drop. What the heck are you talking about? You're going to leave your well-paid job. We've got a mortgage. We've got a newborn child. And you want to go and do something. And you don't even really know what that is yet. Yeah. Are you mad?
Yeah. I'm smiling here, Jeremy, because it's such a classic scene. You know, I talk in the podcast a lot about, you know, the core masculine essence of the male is like that longing for like freedom of expression, just freedom from boundaries. It's like just go into the universe, into the world, and create epic shit. So it's like you on one hand going, I want to break free. You know, I'm a man. What's my total freedom? And, you know, the feminine essence, not completely, this is an oversimplification of both masculine and feminine, but the feminine is like, you know, love and union and safety, the safety of the known. So it's comically just like the contrasting expression of forces, masculine and feminine, just at play. I'm smiling here to myself.
You're so right. And there's just so many ways I could have handled it better. I actually had an interview on my podcast not that long ago with someone he's both a career coach and a relationship coach, and we had a great conversation about discussing career change and these kinds of transitions with your spouse. And for a start, I could have recognized that she wasn't in a place that she wanted to talk about this kind of thing. Now, I could have introduced it far more softly, say, look, everything's fine. I've just been thinking about work and stuff, and there's some things I'd like to talk to you about. Can we come up with a time, you know, when's good for you, when we can chat about it, rather than going in all guns blazing? I mean, one thing that did come out of that approach, I mean, once she'd kind of finished telling me what a ridiculous idea she thought this was, and how I clearly hadn't thought any of this through, she did say, well, you should really think about going and getting some career coaching. And she was absolutely bang right on that, because that was the precursor to my first bout of coaching, which started to give me a little bit more focus on what I wanted to do. So that was something good that came out of it. But overall, I did not handle it anywhere near as well as I could have done.
I'm curious, just to expand on, and I know you've had that podcast episode recently, beyond sort of just finding, you know, a safe time where, you know, your wife could have been more receptive and understanding of what you were saying. What other steps came up in that podcast interview, or from your self-reflection, just looking back, what other steps could you have taken? If you were coaching me now, or one of the guys listening in, what would you be saying? It's like, you know, here's the 2 steps, 3 steps, 4, 5 steps, you know, how to go at it in a much more constructive way that builds in, you know, safety for your woman, safety, you know, that she knows she can feel trust, she can feel safe in, yeah, this is a radically new direction that's been discussed, but honors her safety, but also can support guys with a radical new idea to actually have it received, to have it heard, to start off in a way that's building a solid foundation underneath the idea.
The first thing is definitely realization that you're not going to be in the same place. I mean, it sounds obvious, but I think we have a tendency to expect the person that we're talking to get up to speed in a matter of a minute, when for us, it's actually been a long ongoing thought process. I mean, I'd done thinking for months around this kind of thing, and suddenly I was expecting my wife to get up to speed bang, where it was, in fact, this was the first time she'd heard any of this. So that's the first thing, is recognizing that there is there's going to be a period of sort of mental adjustment, getting up to speed, that kind of thing. The second thing is approaching it from a position of reassurance, especially if it's still in the idea stage. You know, it's the nothing is yet happening. That was an important message which I definitely could have put across, and I think next time I would put it across. So it's saying, look, there's something that I'd like to discuss in relation to my job. Everything's fine. I've not done anything. I'm not being made redundant. Everything's, you know, continuing as it is, but I've just been doing some thinking about it, and I'd like to discuss it with you, you know, that kind of line of thinking. And then when you have the conversation, being open and honest about where you have got to, you know, what it is that you're thinking about, where are you in the thought process, perhaps having an idea as to what the next step might be to solidify the thinking, or with a view to taking action. And then perhaps most importantly, creating space for comeback, questions, concerns. What's, you say your piece, okay, what do you think? And then rather than doing the fairly typical masculine thing of just answering every point there and then and saying, oh no, don't worry about that, that's fine. Having an appreciation, having an understanding, acknowledging that there are going to be lots of feelings of fear and uncertainty. I mean, change is unsettling, and it's probably, if you're going through this transition, unsettling for you, it's going to be as unsettling for your wife. So acknowledging that and allowing your wife to express her fears, not with the expectation of being able to solve those, just, you know, get them out in the open.
That's just so invaluable. I know from, maybe not from the career change to the level of incredible detail that you can speak to it, but I know, you know, just holding that space. We come back to this in the podcast again and again, Jeremy, like guys listening in, it's like just holding, creating that safe space. It's that masculine pull. What I'm hearing you say is like, it's that whole, the masculine gift of holding space for, you know, having a safe space where your wife can just express her concerns, can be emotional, can express, it's like, hey, like I'm deeply fearful of this is like, what? And I really hone in on, you know, that explicit mention of receiving feedback in relationship coaching that I do with powerful guys around the planet. Like, that's one of the key things. I love that you, like, you know, you mentioned that as well, receiving feedback and not just answering like from feigned bravado, you know, superficial facade of I've got my shit sorted with a quick answer every single time. Just be quiet, listen to it, digest it, take it on board, and see how true it is for you. There's amazing wisdom in what you've packed in there, Jeremy.
Yeah, mansplaining is a terrible idea.
I love that. Mansplaining. Man, in all my men's work, there's all these terms that come up. I've never heard that term, mansplaining. I love it. There's a part of the jigsaw I want to actually speak to. So excuse me, guys listening in. As very often, I always love the Mike Tyson quote. It's like, you think you have a plan until, every man has a plan until he gets a punch in the nose. I go quite unscripted in these episodes and they just find their space. But I think you've really created a beautiful, potent context there for when you have the idea, you know, how to speak it to your wife in a way that's safe for your wife, but honors your truth. And, you know, you can just build a solid foundation going forward in your marriage on that conversation. However, if there's guys listening in and maybe initially they're like, well, you know, I'm happy enough, and like, you know, I'm not really vibing, or it's not, just doesn't seem real for me. I know one thing that my first men's work mentor mentioned, and I've never forgotten it. It was like in my first episode, and he said, "It's like, guys, you'll never." He's like, "I'll never stop being amazed by the capacity of men to minimize and normalize chaos and stagnation in their life." And within that context, you know, guys listening in, you know, with that minimizing, normalizing, like, it's not that bad. You know, like, my job is like, oh yeah, well, there's the big commute, but it's not that bad. And there's this insane capacity in modern life when we've been stripped away from, you know, what you're talking about, like questioning, you know, what fills me up, what fulfills me now, this radical aliveness. That doesn't seem to be a variable on most modern men's, you know, dashboard of life. So the minimizing and normalizing happens. What are some things that you have noticed in your own life and in, you know, in the podcast with your audience, you know, you're coaching people on this? What are some signs that guys listening in could look out for in their own life, you know, just to act as a mirror for them? Like, what are some signs that things aren't that well? Sort of like, I know on your website I read, I was like, wow, that just really got me. It was like the feeling of the Monday morning dread, but you're feeling it on a Sunday. It's like you've just got this feeling. I remember that from my wife. She, like, it wasn't just the day of work. She was a horse riding instructor. It wasn't just the day of work. She used to work on a Saturday. It was mental. It was crazy. There was tons of different psychological reasons why she was so attached to it. It was the only way that she could gain attention and love from her narcissistic mother, et cetera, et cetera. So she had every wrong reason to do it. But she didn't just lose a Saturday. She lost the day before as well and the day after. That really jumped out at me as like a sign or a symptom that a guy can go, yeah, man, I'm on a Sunday evening. I'm already making comments of, oh, you know, I have to go to work tomorrow. What other signs and symptoms, Jeremy, have you seen or patterns of behavior that could support a guy go, shit, yeah, I think like that, or man, I find myself doing that and relating to my work in that way. Maybe I'm not in as much alignment with this as I'm thinking I am.
First of all, you are absolutely right that there seems to be just this underlying assumption, which I think still subsists quite a lot, that work is there to be endured rather than enjoyed. Oh, work's not supposed to be fun. It's just something that we have to do. And I don't know whether it's a cultural thing or what, but there really is still that around quite a lot. I mean, I've had conversations recently. I tell people that I help people to find careers that they love, and they kind of look wistfully and think, God, imagine that, doing a job that you actually liked. And you just kind of want to scream at them, yes, yes, and it is possible.
Yeah.
I mean, the Sunday evening blues, that's an absolute classic. I mean, if on a Sunday evening, you know, you're clearing up the dishes and you've got a couple of hours maybe to enjoy a bit of telly or whatever before you go to bed, and your mind's turning to work, and you find yourself wishing away the week, and, you know, thinking, oh, well, how long is it going to be until it's the weekend again? That's definitely a good indicator that something might not be right. Not being too fussed about being ill, maybe kind of thinking, maybe actually if I had a cold and that knocked me out of work for 2 or 3 days, you know, that wouldn't be so bad. You know, it'd be a nice break. Means I don't have to go to work for a bit. I had another guest who's a coach for lawyers, and she described how in the office they'd almost have this kind of like gallows humor. It'd be like, yeah, what if I did go off long-term sick? I mean, how bad would that be? And you kind of think, well, hang on a minute, so you're saying that being long-term sick is a good alternative to work? What does that tell you about the work? So I think there, if you're starting to, you know, fantasize about ways that you might, quotes, get out of, close quotes, work, then that's got to be a good indicator that things aren't necessarily right.
I'm thinking of my brother here. Like, with full pride talking about how he maxes his, there's the holiday allowance, but then there's the sort of sick leave allowance in his job. Whereas like it has been maxed, the sick leave has been maxed for, I don't know how many of the last number of years. He knows the exact amount of days where he's allowed, and then it starts affecting his income. So yeah, there could be a conversation to be had there.
And there's also, I mean, something that has come up in the press quite a lot recently, you know, quiet quitting. So just doing no more than the bare minimum to get by. If the mindset is, oh, well, I'll just do what I have to do as a bare minimum, then again, that's another warning sign. Well, you know, why don't you want to do a bit more than that? I mean, I'm not saying that you necessarily have to, you know, go above and beyond working all the hours, doing all the extra work that isn't necessarily part of your brief. But if you're in your mind thinking, I'm just going to do the bare minimum that I need to get by for this job, what's that telling you about the work that you're doing and how fulfilling it is for you?
There's so much to speak to that, Jeremy. Like the bare minimum, what jumped out at me straight away, and it's the correlation. You know, this is why I brought you on board. And like everything you're saying, it's like it's amazing. You're speaking to the relationship with work, and yet there's so many signs there of, oh wow, that it just shows up, almost like directly correlating how guys relate with their marriage. You know, it's just are you just doing the bare minimum? You know, giving out about it, you know, oh, my wife went off for the weekend, and, you know, there's the jokes of, you know, oh, thank God, you know, I can bring my mates over, I can do what I want. You know, it's like there's all of these ways of relating with your job here through your lens. My lens is like in marriage, where, you know, if you're relating, if guys listening in, and, you know, I remember I was doing the bare minimum in physio for a couple of years, and that was a real key thing for me. It's like, wow, you know, I'm doing the bare minimum. I'm not interested in it anymore. I want to put all my time and energy into this other stuff, like mind, body, spirit stuff. I was doing the bare minimum. But it's this idea, if you're doing the bare minimum in your job, yeah, and there's no passion. Like bare minimum, if you're passionate about it, you'd be doing the maximum. Like it would be easy, you'd be motivated, you'd be focused, etc. But if that's how you're relating like that, I was like, wow, you know, like how does that man, you know, how do you arrive home after doing the bare minimum all day? You know, are you maxed to the last with motivation and love of life and passion for your wife, for your parenting, etc., etc.? So yeah, I just really want to speak that. I'm just so pumped listening to you saying the list. There's so many correlations with, if you're struggling in work, you're struggling in marriage. It's like almost like the exact same perspective that guys look at both relationships.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And that's one thing that I have learned, is this correlation between happiness at work and happiness in your relationship. They are inextricably intertwined. If you're not happy at work, then there's a good chance that it is going to affect your relationship, and vice versa.
Jeremy, I think we're like just building into like just epic value for guys listening in. So let's just work with an assumption here. Let's imagine, because it happens, I know, in men's work and with coaching guys. And I think there was some, is it the Gallup poll? Maybe you can confirm the statistics on this, but I seem to remember recently on this topic where something like 80% of people worldwide in this major research, 80 to 85-90% of people are deeply unfulfilled, unsatisfied, or really unhappy at work. It's mind-boggling. And it's like, it's this real modern trait. So with that sort of research, and I know I've read multiple books sort of on the topic, or there's going to be a lot of guys listening in. And, you know, part of the podcast here is like we really speak, and I just, with the guys listening in, you know, the reminder is, and the direct masculine challenge is to get into like full heroic humility mode. You know, like this is, again, it's like stripping away that defense mechanism of minimizing and normalizing. It's like, oh yeah, you know, that's okay for Jeremy, that's okay for Mark, you know, I'll press stop, or I listen, but I won't listen fully. I won't let these reflections really just touch home. My invitation is like, just be courageous. This is epic what, you know, Jeremy is bringing up and the wisdom. And but within the context, you know, a lot of guys listening in, statistically, there's going to be like the majority of guys listening in, Jeremy, are going to have this idea of, man, I'm like, with what Jeremy is saying, it's like, shit, you know, I'm not relating with my job in a passionate way. You know, like I'm enduring my job. I have this idea that it's like, I'm just going to see out the time for the pension. It's good for money. It's like, it pays off the bills, blah, blah, blah. But there's no real rooted core enjoyment. The Sunday evening blues idea, that could be hitting home with guys. And then just not being fussed about being ill. It's like, oh, you know, I have a cold. Cool. I have an excuse to ring in sick for a week and not feel bad about it, et cetera, et cetera. And that bare minimum idea. So, Jeremy, assuming that guys, you know, are resonating with that, and there's this sense of, yeah, fuck, there could be something here. There could be something really real here. So that realization, that seed of truth coming true, there could be something here. If I want to be a fulfilled, radically alive man in myself, you know, I probably need to act on this. The second part of that journey, we're sort of just piecing this jigsaw together. You've already powerfully given context to that. Create safety around your woman, set the scene for her to receive. Don't bombard her with like big, massive declarations. You know, just go easy with the idea of just reassurance in the idea phase, the clarifying, the thinking, receive feedback and appreciation, and hold space for her to have whatever emotional reactions is. The third step, assuming that there's this idea, there's a change needed, and then they know how to communicate in the initial phases, Jeremy, what then? You know, with a guy there, he's got the idea. He's listening in. He's like, fuck, there could be something here. Okay, I'm going to need to have that conversation. But what then? What is there any set process for a guy to go, well, you know, there's the steps. It's ABC. Or what does that look like beyond that first conversation with your woman? And now you've got the ball rolling.
So I'm going to divide it sort of broadly into three steps, if you like, or three processes. And this is the way that I coach people when they come to me. We are biased towards taking action. Just do something. I don't like my job. I'll quit my job and get another one in the same field. And then you realize that it wasn't actually where you were working. The problem is it's the job at heart. So instead of immediately taking action, the first thing I encourage my clients to do is a bit of self-reflection. So the image I like to use for this is, let's say you go to a large shopping mall. It's an unfamiliar shopping mall. You've never been there before, and it's, you know, five floors, it's got hundreds of stores, and, you know, maybe you've got an idea which store you want to go to, but you've no idea what it is. So the first thing you probably do is go and find a map, and you look on that map and you look for the dot which says you are here. So in the context of the first stage of the process, that you are here is about understanding more about yourself, because a lot of people won't necessarily have done this kind of self-reflection, where you look at things like your strengths. You might have an idea of some of the things that you're good at. There are probably other things where you don't really know what you're good at, but taking the time to figure out what are the things that you excel at and where you find that state of flow when you're doing them, and not just from your own experiences, but finding out from other people. Another exercise I have my clients do is a 360 feedback, where they go off armed with a load of questions to family, friends, which draw out the things that they're really good at. And then the second really important piece to that is your own personal values, which is always quite a tricky concept to explain, but it's really about the things which motivate you and which are important to you. So to give you an example, one of the business ideas I had was offering a service to podcasters. It was sort of in the transcription space. It's like a done for you service. It was a model which I used for my own podcast, which I knew I could scale up and offer to others. And it was, and I maintain still is, a good business idea. But it was when I started doing it that I realized I just wasn't enjoying it. So no matter how good an idea it might have been and how much I could see the path to scaling it up, I wasn't enjoying it. And it was when I later did work on my values and realized that my top value was community and social connection and being around other people. And then my second top value was collaboration, so working with people to produce something. None of those were being reflected in this business idea and what I was doing day to day. So it wasn't surprising that, as good an idea as it may have been, it didn't resonate with me. So finding out your own personal set of values and listing them and ranking them is one of the most valuable things, certainly one of the most valuable things I did. And I think it's one of the most valuable things that someone else can do as well. I had a client who had, she had an idea that she wanted to build this sort of center. She's a hypnotherapist and she wanted to build this kind of center where she could serve loads and loads of people. And she also worked through her values and realized that one of her top values was mastery. And for her, that meant going deep with people on a one-to-one level, which was completely at odds with this idea she had of creating a center. And so it explained and indicated to her that that wasn't going to be something that was right for her, even if it may have been a great idea.
Yeah, I definitely resonate with the importance of finding the value. I know one of my values, and it's truth/honesty. I don't know if there's technically a difference, but I've been sort of going there really at the core of my essence as a man. It's like truth to me, my capacity to speak my truth, and by extension, other men in my work and in my parenting. It's like, is the truth of the person in front of me being honored here? It's just so, so important. And that's what, when I started realizing that, it was like working as a physiotherapist. I won't go into a whole massive conversation about the healthcare system on the planet, but it's like, it's so dysfunction based. And there was a part of me going, it's like, this isn't true. I mean, there's so, like, this entire system is not based on the truth. It's like, we know how to prevent all of these things. We have the technologies available. We have the exercises. We have the proactive ways that if we just educated people from the start in the true things, like, the whole globe could be radically alive and radically healthy. It's like that truth, that core value is like, I can't keep staying in this system that is so, you know, biased against the truth of what we know as the human family, what can really truly move the needle and allow everybody to have radical health. So I had to get out, and hence, you know, the podcast actually for me is I get to speak whatever I want, you know, within reason, because like, it's my truth. If guys vibe with it, if they like it, but it's just that radical truth. So yeah, I just want to share that. I come really alive when you say about the importance of finding your values, Jeremy. I'm curious, what else? So you have this first part here, this self-reflection, the shopping mall. I like that, you know, like just the you are here sign, finding your strengths, getting feedback from your community, maybe journaling within yourself and your values. Is there any more to this first phase, or what are the next steps, Jeremy?
There's other things around that. I mean, the flip side of strengths is, as you might expect, weaknesses. But the way that I approach weaknesses is slightly different, because a lot of people see weaknesses as something, oh, I just need to get better at it. Whereas the approach I take with people is identifying the things that you're not necessarily good at, but coming up with other strategies of dealing with them. There's a quote from Michael Hyatt, and I can't remember the quote at all, but the essence of it is that you will move the needle much further by focusing on your strengths rather than trying to make good your weaknesses. So it's looking at what you could do to manage those. So it might be, one option is sort of just getting good enough that, you know, it's acceptable. Another is delegating to someone else. Say you're in business and you're the ideas person, but you're not the execution person, then teaming up with someone who is the execution person, so that's you play to their strength while you play to your strength. Getting so good at your strengths that it doesn't really matter what you're not good at. I mean, that's another thing. So that's another exercise I encourage my clients to do. And then I guess finally on this one, it's identifying and acknowledging the limiting beliefs that you have about yourself, because everyone has them. And acknowledging them, it doesn't necessarily mean that, oh, if your limiting belief is that you're a hyperachiever and everything has to be perfect, that doesn't necessarily point you in the direction of a particular career or not, but it means that you can start to recognize that voice. So if your own personal saboteur is something like a hyperachiever or a perfectionist or a victim, then when you start to have negative thoughts, you can recognize them in your head and acknowledge that those thoughts are there, acknowledge that, you know, they're trying to keep you safe, but they're not necessarily reality. And so you can prevent them from holding you back. A great book on this subject is called Taming Your Gremlins by Rick Carson. Definitely recommend the audience to look into that one. So that's kind of the you are here piece.
The weakness part. I almost had to burst out laughing, because it's recently in my business mastermind. I got a lot of fire under my ass because, I wasn't complaining, but maybe I was complaining. I wasn't cognizant of it if I was, but anyway, I was speaking to the guys. I was like, oh yeah, you know, I didn't get to get my program live because, you know, I had all of these, you know, hitches behind the scenes, you know, setting up the website, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the guys just said to me, it's like, Mark, I mean, that's not your genius zone. You've been telling us, you know, for quite some time, you don't like doing all this technical setup behind the scenes shit. So why don't you just go on to like Upwork or Fiverr and just outsource it? You know, like for $5, somebody in Bangladesh will do it for, you know, very little. They make great money. You get it for half nothing. Why don't you just do that? And yeah, it was just like one of those mind-opening things. Like, my genius zone is, you know, podcasts, is relationships. It's like producing the content, is writing about relationships, etc. Mind, body, spirit, all related through being a family guy. It ain't fucking setting up technical digital shit behind the scenes. That I'm really super slow. Can I grind it out over 3 or 4 days? Yeah, but I mean, yeah, just outsource it. That's my weakness, and I'm no Bill Gates in this in this life, reincarnation or incarnation. So yeah, I really get that point. You know, just leave the weaknesses where they are and just hone in on your genius point. Moving on. So that's a really comprehensive building context into the first phase of what you're saying is a three-step process, the self-reflection part. So assuming that guys have taken the time, Jeremy, get coaching with you, to read the book, you know, to follow your podcast. I'm really just want to put it in there, your podcast, following your amazing, to get the resources there. So to build this solid base under their feet, they're self-aware, they're not going into this blind. What's step two in the process that you guide people through?
So step two is brainstorming. And the important thing to remember with this process is at the start, not to rule anything out. And it comes back to what I was saying about limiting beliefs. So maybe Jeremy wants to be a career coach, but he thinks, oh no, I'm not going to put that on the list. I could never do that. There's no money on it. It's too difficult. I'm not a self-marketer, blah, 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 blah. Okay, forget all that. Forget what you believe about something. Put it on the list. So start to build up just things which you've considered. Things, maybe hobbies that you have. Could you do that professionally? Say you like video games and you really like video games. Could you be a professional gamer, for example? Or could that lend itself to coding? Whatever it might be. So you start to brainstorm just a list of things that you could do, just things which have sparked your interest in the past. Maybe they're things which when you were young, you said that's what you wanted to be when you grew up. You know, I said when I was 7 or 8 years old, I was telling all my relatives that I was going to be an author because I enjoyed doing creative writing when I was at school. And then, you know, I put that to one side and just assumed that it was the fantasy of a child. But you know, that kind of thing, bring it back into play, add it to the list. So you end up with this fairly long list. It might be, you know, you want to go for more is more, I'd say 20 items minimum, just things that you could do, things that sound vaguely interesting, possibly things which relate to stuff that you already do on the side anyway. And then it becomes an exercise of taking the work that you've done with your self-reflection and also identifying what else you can bring to the party. So perhaps having you make a list of your skills, you make a list of your values, you make a list of anything else which you've identified as being important in whatever you do. Maybe that is an income level. Maybe it's something which does permit time freedom. So it's not a 9-to-5, it's something where you could choose your own hours. You know, what are the important characteristics? Maybe it's the ability to work remotely. Maybe it's not the ability to work remotely. Maybe it's something where you get to travel with work, whatever it is. And you effectively, it's as simple as building up a matrix. So you know, you can do this on a spreadsheet where you just down one side you put all your list of possible careers. Across the top you put all the stuff like your values, your strengths, your skills, the other things which are important to you, and you literally just put a check mark where they align up and see what the scores are. So see where are things which score highly, where are things which don't score highly, and look at those. And that can be a pretty good indicator of what sort of things, not necessarily to say that this is what you're going to then jump ship and do, but it's a good indicator of whittling down your 20 strong shortlist to a list of maybe 3 things that are worth exploring in more depth.
Yeah, I'm on fire here with the practical nature of this step too, because I know time and time again, and I've learned the hard way myself. I'll be honest with you, Jeremy, like with the guys listening in, like the amount of time, the excuses I was making, and in conflict with my beautiful queen, a lot of grief about putting shit on her shoulders and on my kids and that, but ultimately it was like blaming them. That, oh, I couldn't do it because, you know, because of obligations to my family, et cetera, et cetera. But the sort of mantra in my own mind has come for the last couple of years, which has served me so much. It's very related with what you're saying here, which is, Mark, there's only one limitation ever in your life. It's a lack of creative thinking. That mantra has got me through. So thick and thin, this podcast wouldn't be in being if it wasn't creative thinking. The Mars Transformation Heroes that's about to launch, it's creative thinking, creative thinking, creative thinking. I've like had my head, you know, my inner critic or the saboteur, as you mentioned earlier on, that part of me wants to beat the shit out of me. I've like two older brothers, and growing up, like there's always this shadow part of my persona in the background wanting to hammer me, sort of like, who the fuck do you think you are? If you just keep reflecting and find creative thoughts and just get the data, get the evidence in front of you, there is that flame in guys listening in. Once you do this process, I'm feeling it's like you just brainstorm. The more ideas that line up, the more you see it in front of you, the more you start believing it, and the less and less the power, the more you take the power from that inner saboteur, that inner critic. So I just love the practical nature. I can see how this is so potent, how and why you'd bring people through this. So you've number one, the self-reflection. They've went on that journey, Jeremy. They've done a lot of deep inner work and realization. Number two, they're just putting it out there. The best way to have great ideas is have lots of ideas, brainstorming, getting it all down, and they're beginning to feel, fuck, there's something here. Or they have a couple of ideas what they might go at. What's step number three with this growing clarity that's emerging within them?
So once you've got your short list of things which could be interesting, that's the time to start going out and finding out more. And there's some amazing resources out there. The number one most amazing resource is the people who are already doing it. So when I was starting to think seriously about coaching as a possibility, what did I do? I reached out to coaches. I made some time with them and asked them an absolute ton of questions about what coaching was, the qualifications you could do, getting clients, all that kind of thing, to learn about it. And also so I could continually test whether it still excited me as a possibility. And it's an approach which, I mean, networking just generally, I cannot stress how powerful it is and how non-scary as well. I mean, networking is just talking to people. It's finding people that you'd like to talk to and striking a conversation. You and I had exchanged messages before we started recording this interview, but we'd never spoken before. What we're doing now, as well as hopefully providing value to your audience, is we're networking. We're finding out about each other. We're finding out about our respective struggles and triumphs and what's working and what's not working, all that kind of stuff. So in a career context, networking enables you to find out about people, find out about the work they do, find out about the company they work for, what's good, what's not so good, what's interesting. One of my favorite questions is, if you were advising someone who was just starting out, who wanted to get into this, what would you suggest they do? Because the answers might surprise you. A limiting belief which many people have is, oh, I can't do that because it means that I've got to go back and do another 3-year degree at university or something like that. And I just can't afford that. I can't spend the time doing that. Well, a conversation with someone who's already a few steps ahead of you may yield the result that, no, that's not necessary. There are other routes into this profession, other less traditional routes that you could try. So as well as getting information, it also starts to build relationships with people in this industry. And so it might create opportunity. I mean, you know, maybe in 6 months' time, someone remembers having had a conversation with you and they've got an opening up and they think, oh, actually, yeah, you know, that guy, Mark, he'd probably be quite a good fit. I wonder if he's still looking for jobs. And so they might get in touch with you and say, hey, you know, we were talking about this. Is this something that you're still interested in? Is that guaranteed to happen every time? No, of course not. But it's by creating the network that you create these sorts of, you create the potential for these sorts of opportunities.
What, I'm just curious, because I know my mechanistic mind and a lot of guys listening in, and excuse me if you haven't mentioned it, or if I haven't picked you up. So there's point one, self-reflection. Point two, brainstorming. Are you already describing stage number three? I just want to get it into guys' minds so they can.
Completely. It's kind of session. It's kind of section three and a half, because it straddles two. No, hang on, two and a half, not three and a half. Two and a half. So it kind of straddles two and three. So two is the brainstorming and then narrowing down the brainstorming, and the network in the sense of the information gathering is sort of part of that brainstorming. But it's also then part of part three, which is the taking action, which is the, okay, so I'm currently in IT. I've been through this process. I think I want to have a crack at fashion design, which genuinely was the where a client of mine got to. So part three is, okay, so what do I need to do to make that happen? Does it involve going back to school, or is there some kind of qualification or experience that I can get elsewhere? Can I gain stuff from doing a course on Udemy or LinkedIn Learning or something like that? Who can I speak to maybe apprentice, you know, do some work under them, either for free or for cheap? It's starting to design your path. So if I want to pursue this as a career, what are the steps that will help me get there? Does it involve, and it could be quite a long journey. It could be taking intermediate career steps. So maybe you're a lawyer who wants to go into coding. Well, are there, you know, legal jobs, but more in a technical sphere, which could kind of help you straddle that divide? Or do you just go straight to a coding bootcamp, sign up on Upwork and try and find work doing coding projects, that kind of thing? So it's taking the action. It's taking the action that's going to take you down that path. That's really what stage three is all about.
Jeremy, I'm struggling not to burst into laughter here. It's laughter, but you know, it's the sort of manic laughter. It's the type where, you know, I don't mean to be, well, probably inappropriate humor, but it's like, you know, you're walking down a dark alleyway, and it's the type of laughter that of the guy historically laughing there in the corner. That's the type of laughter I'm talking about, because I'm like, oh, I did the polar opposite of all of this, Jeremy. I did the Tony Robbins I mentioned earlier on. It was like, I listened to a lot of take massive action, and you know, the whole burn the ships idea.
Yeah.
I did. Oh man. I'm like, oh fuck. I did the whole, I really like took the whole burn the ships, hook, line and sinker, like to an extreme. Do you remember like what I said earlier on the conversation? It's like, I did that. It was like end of the week, said to my woman, it's like, hey, I think I'd be the freest man alive, you know, if I just stopped being a physio. And that Monday I stopped taking on new clients, and I saw the old clients, and it's like, I'm a men's coach now. And yeah, like I did very little or no self-reflection. Brainstorming, non-existence. I just went with massive action and I made the shit happen. And I've actually been recovering from the secondary trauma of that ever since. Like, that was actually, my wife wasn't fully safe. Thus, our kids weren't safe financially. There's been tough times. We somehow managed to maintain 7-8 horses, tried a whole lot. We've tons of animals. I've kept the whole thing together. I honor myself in my ignorance of doing it so, with such outlandish ignorance, I honor myself of getting through. Yet, I really want to just like put it to guys there. It's like, it's masterful. I've been writing notes. I've like just these three steps, Jeremy, and the guys listening in. I've like an A4 page full of notes. And my whole nervous system is just sort of like a grief off, Mark, fuck me. Like, if you had this information, you know, 6 years ago, how easier it could have been, like a path of least resistance. There's going to be trials and tribulations anyway. But there's so much value in what you're saying, Jeremy. I know, because I've lived it out the opposite. I went straight to number three, take massive action, did none of the rest, and I've been like course correcting ever since. There's so much value in this. It's insane how this simplifies the path and makes it, I suppose it's like it's mini steps. You're breaking it down here where it's mini steps, bit by bit, bit by bit. And one thing that comes up for me, which has been a major thing, is like your identity gets the time to get up to speed in little steps. You know, identity is everything. I know myself, it's like I had an identity as a physiotherapist, but I didn't have an identity yet as a men's coach. I really liked it. I've stuck with it. So it was true for me. But this process here, what I feel coming on, the genius part is it's mini steps. You know, every conversation, every email, every bit of an online course you do or book you read or person that you link in with and all the brainstorming phase, it's like it gives it would give a guy's nervous system to slowly but surely get up to speed with, yes, this is who I am. But it's not an overnight thing. It was like an abuse that I did to my system to expect it to just quantum leap into, I'm a world-class men's coach. So yeah, it's genius. I just love how you've set this up, Jeremy.
What works well with this approach is that you get to design your own path, which aligns with you. So, you know, we talked about strengths, values, that kind of thing. People like Tony Robbins and you know, that kind of ilk, they put out some absolutely inspirational content and, you know, take massive action. It's where it's an easy mindset to get into where you just think, oh, I just need to do what they did and I will have similar levels of success. You know, people look at, I don't know, Instagram influencers and think, oh, if I just do what they do, then I'll also enjoy the same riches and the same fame as they are. The trouble is, neither you or I are Tony Robbins. We're not whichever Instagram influencer we find particularly appealing. You are Mark Usher. I am Jeremy Klein. We are our own unique bundle of everything that makes us who we are, our experiences, our personal values, everything. And if you can work to figure out what that bundle represents and then find something which aligns with that, then I believe that's where success is more likely to lie. I don't believe that I'm going to follow, you know, get Tony Robbins' success just by doing exactly whatever it is he did, or Robert Kiyosaki, or, you know, any of those other people. It's got to be finding my own path and doing something which aligns with me. Yeah, you know, I mentioned earlier Unscripted, MJ DeMarco, and the appeal of the business model where you're not trading time for money. Well, you know, I'm looking to get into personal coaching, one-on-one coaching. And yeah, sure, there are models that I could use where it becomes less time dependent and more breaking that link between the two. But actually, I'm comfortable that the core of my business is going to be that exchange of time for money, because it's going to be exchanging time doing something which genuinely I want to do and which aligns with me for that money. So, okay, yeah, you know, I can see the appeal. I can put in place other systems which, you know, generate income without that link to time. But in terms of my core thing, this is something which feels much more aligned with me. And so that's hopefully what's going to make it successful for me.
Jeremy, there's just healing words coming through you. And there is a context here that is, I've mentioned it earlier on, but, you know, there's one thing I noted about a lot of guys that were doing sort of, you know, inspirational work around the planet. And there's no commentary. It's actually, I don't know. I know Tony got divorced and he's onto his second marriage and it's all beautiful. And so I can't make any judgment. I don't know what is the reason, the ultimate reason why people split. But I did notice, to my surprise, I'm like, wow, you know, Tony Robbins. And then I think it was Wayne Dyer. It's like, oh, he's second. I think there was two divorces. And then there was another couple of guys like, wow, I'm actually listening to these guys. And they're teaching around the world people how to have fulfilling lives and beautiful marriages, you know, and parent their kids. And their marriages are falling apart. Now, cause effect, maybe they were just like, they weren't meant to be, et cetera, et cetera. I really just, it startled me. And it really put a seed in my intentionality, because, you know, this is the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. What I'm hearing in everything you're saying, Jeremy, and this is why I got you on. I was like, I'm so happy, you know, that intuition to link in with you. I feel it works, especially for family men, especially for the context of, you know, you could have 10, 15, 20 years of a family life, an ecosystem of multiple different values, needs, you know, the setup of one or two careers, you know, mortgages. There's a ton of sacred responsibilities in that ecosystem. And what I'm hearing and what you're saying, Jeremy, is like, this is a system that you can take mini steps, tiny mini steps every single day over a whole year using this, or, you know, maybe ultra concentrate over 3 months. But if you did this process over 3 to 6 months, you might speak to time frames. It's insane how you can move the needle. I just want guys listening in, because I know that for me, the transfer of my work from physiotherapy, where I was very good. It just wasn't my genius zone. So wherever they find themselves, maybe you just don't like your job, or you're good, but it's just not your genius zone. The difference it has made for my marriage, and my wife would say that to me now, if she was in this conversation, she's like, Mark is just a different man. You know, I started getting up at 5 a.m. in the morning. I've aligned my whole, you know, my entire life's schedule. Because why? I'm pumped. I'm excited to get up. There's no effort. I've never been jumping out of bed like ever before. That level of passion and excitement and focus and motivation for my mission and in my work, my wife is feeling that from me. My kids are feeling that from me. And your approach, Jeremy, just allows, I feel it sets such a safe foundation for guys to have the idea first, recognize the signs and the symptoms, you know, going to just all of that, the details that you've given, recognize the signs and symptoms that it mightn't be in alignment, then go, okay, there's an initial conversation, how to do that in a safe way, a nurturing way that your wife, your family unit can feel safe. You don't steamroll it with truth telling, you take on her feedback, etc. And then the three steps process here, the self-reflection, the brainstorming, and finally, you know, just pull the trigger, start taking action, but only when you've built that incredible foundation. Jeremy, it's sacred work you're doing. It's a safe, holistic, beautiful, I think, safe. It's a safe system that allows bold action to happen, you know, progressively over time. Yeah, it's so invaluable for guys listening in. Coming into landing, Jeremy, if we believe the statistics out there, and they're quite cross-cultural at this point, you know, the majority of guys listening in will have some inspirations, will have some clarities and breakthroughs and insights of, you know, their relationship with work mightn't be, you know, where they really want to have it long term. And a lot of guys, as a result, could be very interested in reaching out to you to know more about your work and your mission in the world. Where can guys find you online, Jeremy?
So home base for me is my website, which is changeworklife.com. So changeworklife is all one word, changeworklife.com, which is also the name of my podcast, which you can find pretty much anywhere you find podcasts. And there's links on there to my social handles. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and I'm at Change Work Life on those three platforms. There's also a contact form on my website. It's changeworklife.com/contact. And there's also a link to a couple of exercises which starts you down the path of the self-reflection. So if that's something that people have heard and they think, okay, I'd like to start that, but I don't really know how to start, then there's a couple of exercises on my website which are a great starting point to begin that process. So if you look for on the website for two exercises to find career happiness, or interested in starting with their self-reflection, and could just do with a bit of structure to make the start.
Man, that's immense value. Definitely check it out, guys. You know, if this episode, if just a conversation between myself and Jeremy here today, is, if it's firing you up, if that, there's a candle burning in every guy. And like, I just, my spiritual work here at, you know, Be the Husband She Brags About, it's like you've got to get that blazing red hot on all levels. I mentioned the marriage mastery system, the salary part, just a reminder. And I just think Jeremy's work, definitely follow it. You know, it's a masterful path to achieving this. It's like the heroic husband creates income in alignment with his values and learns money mastery to keep his family secure and his highest vision on course. Everything today in my mind just really sets you to blazing that fire of inspiration inside of you in a safe, sustainable, beautiful unfoldment in a way that honors your truth inside you, honors your genius, honors that expansion that is yours. That's the masculine core heart. And like, don't sell yourself short. And, you know, Be the Husband She Brags About, don't sell your wife short, or don't sell your kid short of receiving your full blaze of inspiration and genius being gifted to the world. Jeremy Klein, thank you so much for coming on today. That has been immensely valuable for me. I've loved every minute of it, and such value for everybody. Thank you, sir, for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Coming into landing, guys, the deepest reminder why it is we do this work. Better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazing, beautiful, kingly day. And before you go, guys, our brand new live training, Marriage Transformation Heroes 2023, is now launched. In this 4-month live online small group training program, you will go from fearing your best will never be enough to being the confident and competent marriage transforming hero of your relationship. The decision is yours. You can end years of needless struggle and stagnation, risking divorce papers being landed on your breakfast table. Register now and learn to master communication, connection, and attraction the Be the Husband She Brags About way. Link in the podcast description. Register now.